Ladies and gentlemen, you are about to witness some scenes from the next attraction to play this theater. This picture, truly one of the most unusual ever filmed, contains scenes which under no circumstances should be viewed by anyone with a heart condition or anyone who is easily upset. We urgently recommend that if you are such a person or the parent of a young or impressionable child now in attendance, that you and the child leave the auditorium for the next 90 seconds.
Friends, have you ever gone, "That was a really good episode of Murder, She Wrote, but it could use some necrophilia"? Then have I got the movie for you. Tonight on the Video Nasty Project, we're watching I Miss You Hugs and Kisses. Check out the trailer.
2 months ago, Charles Krushen, millionaire husband of former model Magdalene Krushen, offered a $10,000 reward for information leading to the capture of his wife's murderer. Today, through a dramatic turn of events, Krushen himself has been charged with a brutal slaying of his wife, Magdalene Krushen, who was found bludgeoned to death in her home. Charles Krushen, her husband, was charged with the murder and later released on a $100,000 bond.
Why would I want to kill her when, obviously, divorce is the sensible way out?
All she is a money-grubbing little nothing.
It's not $24,000, it's $27,000 with all the extras, you know.
Goddamn little whore.
I just don't get a shit.
You were once the best friend of the cure.
I planned to get a divorce. And then I would come over and we'd get married.
Corte, how long have you known about the murder? How long have you and Charles Krushen been lovers?
I found myself thinking of ways of killing Magdalene.
What?
Yeah.
How?
Actually planning it.
I miss you.
And welcome back. We just got done seeing Shit Rashomon. A.K.A. I Love You Hugs and Kisses. Come on, tell me it's not a shitty version of Rashomon.
Okay, that's a very valid way of looking at it.
So basically the story is you have Charles, who came over from behind the Iron Curtain, and he wound up hooking up with a ex-model, this really hot, well, I mean, Silky Summer, for God's sake. And they have this very broken relationship, where he wants love and affection, and she just wants the D, and she just wants his money. He, meanwhile, he's off sleeping around with a mistress and basically plotting to kill Elkie Summer.
She's in her house. She's wandering around. She goes down into the garage, and somebody whacks her on the back of the head with a hammer.
Out of nowhere, just comes in with a lead pipe and just starts wailing on her.
And the assumption is it's a guy in a car. They show a guy driving, and apparently later it turns out to be a murderer, mass murderer, on the loose.
But we don't necessarily know, because this movie is essentially Unreliable Narrator, the movie.
Right. Oh my God, the unreliable narrator is horrible in this movie. This is a case where the person telling the story deliberately lies to the audience repeatedly about what's going on, so that you wind up being kind of confused and going, huh?
Well, the one thing I found interesting about the beginning of the movie is she walks into this room, and on her right are a bunch of mirrors. There's five of them. So she has five dissociative reflections. Now, if I counted correctly, there were five. There was one actual murder and four imagined ones.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got five murders, five reflections, and each one kind of represents, I guess, a facet of her life in this movie.
That's an interesting thing. I didn't pick up on that.
But then you just have all this flabby nonsense bullshit that you just have to wade through to get to that point.
Well, mm-hmm. And since this movie is about a man having fantasies, what if this entire film has been a fantasy and all the men are actually just facets of his personality?
We don't know.
Or they're people he knows, but he has adopted parts of their personalities and basically expressed them in different ways and, you know, beat her to death.
Well, the one of the problems that this movie has is it's a good story. It's just told really poorly.
And that lack of narrative cohesion. All the plot points are there, and you really have to try and watch them and, like, understand what the hell's going on. But everything is so boring that I just kept falling asleep or wandering away, or just my attention wandered. And I'm mm-hmm. like, and so it's a real chore to get to that point, even though it gives you all the information you need.
I was able to figure out that they were flashbacks, and some of them were well done, but others weren't, where they did so many flashbacks between events leading up to the murder and stuff going on in the trial that they're talking about these events in the trial. And as a mechanism, that actually works because you had to see the events that they're talking about, but it was handled fairly clumsily in a not all of them, but the majority of flashbacks, so that you didn't know what character was the point of view. You didn't know whether or not it was the prosecutor or the defender that was analyzing it. I mean, sometimes you did, but sometimes you didn't.
So, yeah, like I said, it's a narrative mess. It's just you have no idea what point of view is going on at that moment.
Well, there was one really interesting, rather staggering bit where the third man, the older of the revolutionaries who got shot and left for dead.
Yeah, we should point out the bullet point of the... So when Charles comes over from behind the Iron Curtain, he's brought two friends. He's brought along his photographer friend, and he's brought along an older gentleman with a mustache who gets shot and is left for dead.
He gets shot by the cops after a protracted chase and flashes back to the escape across the little stream. And it just intercuts several times. And then it's like, this is the sort of closure, the last bullet. The first bullet did its job, but it took 20 years. So considering the title on the screen at the beginning of the movie,
Left for Dead.
Left for Dead, there are two people in this film that are left for dead. There's Magdalene, bludgeoned to death at the beginning of the movie, and then the older revolutionary who's shot and left for dead on the opposite bank of the
third man, the one with the mustache.
Yeah. And so what if he's been plotting all along to completely bollocks Charles's life, not only his, but anybody else that gets in his way, like the photographer, like Magdalene, you know, take everything away from Charles that he holds dear.
And that, this movie is frustrating because that could be interesting. If that was actually what was going on, and if the narrative was structured to, you could obfuscate, so you don't necessarily know what's going on, but that's the through line. And then the big reveal at the end, hey, it was really me all along.
Yeah.
That would have been, I would have liked that movie.
Yeah, that would have been far more interesting. And if it hadn't have been for the clicking of the heels theme surrounding the mistress, I would have really thought that it was the third man that had done it, as not so much a revenge killing to get rid of the contractor and the photographer, but just to humiliate and shame and to hurt them by killing the woman that both of them loved.
That title supports the thesis much better than I Love You Hugs and Kisses, which yeah. is like completely bland.
Because then yeah. then it's implied probably that the old man is actually the motivator of this thing and not the wife, and that was basically incidental, but it's what gets things, the murder is what gets things running, but it's actually revenge by the old man against being left.
Yeah.
There's a ton of suspects and a ton of motives in this movie. You've got the old man shot at the border crossing who mysteriously pops up again 20 years later into Charles's life. And is he the one behind it? You have the photographer who is crazy, envious, jealous of Charles and his mm-hmm. wife. And you stole this woman from me. I hate you so much. Did he do it? Is it the mistress who wants Elkie out of the way? Is it just that random murder dude who just kind of happens to be walking past and beat the hell out of her?
Is it the police chief who's completely incompetent and does things like removing clothing at a murder scene without gloves?
I cannot get a good read on that cop. I can't tell if he was just incompetent or if he was legitimately, you know, had a... something to do with, okay, I'm pissed at you. I want to kill, you know, throw you under the bus.
And one thing I noticed about them bagging the clothing, though, is that not only did they not use gloves, they bagged everything all together.
Mm-hmm.
You don't do that. You bag each item individually.
Well, hell, the corrupt and or incompetent cop removed her fingernails, and the DA came to her and came to him and said, "Hey, why did you do this?" And it's like, "Well, I was trying to preserve evidence." Okay, the extent of my lawyer skills is I've seen season one of Perry Mason a couple of times. I know that's grounds for a mistrial. Objection!
Yeah, that's some bullshit because he's violated the murder scene by removing the false by removing her plastic fingernails.
The chain of evidence is this no bueno.
And when the prosecutor or defense attorney asks, "Well, didn't you think it was rather odd that you removing evidence from a crime scene that you're basically contaminating a crime scene?" And the police chief says, "I didn't think it was important at the time." And then they'd done surveillance on Charles by using his friend, and when asked how many tapes he had, he said something like, "Oh,
75
like,
or something, 70, yeah.
like 80, yeah. 80 tapes." Wait a minute, 80 tapes, and you've only got 8. Where are the other 72? Oh, we got rid of them. I didn't think it was pertinent.
Yeah, they weren't necessary.
What the fuck? You're a cop. You keep that. You file these things away. You don't get rid of them.
Obviously, he came from the L.A. police force up to...
By way of hardware school. Yeah. God damn it.
One thing that utterly baffles me about this man is if he got to be police chief in 9 years and he's this incompetent, what does this say for the Toronto Police Department? They're a complete bunch of yahoos? No, I call complete bullshit on that.
So the movie was based on a real life story, the real life story of Peter Demeter. I wonder if they had a corrupt and or incompetent cop that was throwing dirt into the machine in real life.
Another thing is all of the times that Charles said to his friend, "Oh, you know, I had this fantasy about killing my wife." And then he said, "But I don't actually want to do it. It's just a fantasy. I mean, I would never actually do that." But he's saying, "Oh, we can't say that.
That'll implicate me too."
Yeah, guilt by association.
I did like because they would occasionally flash to Charles's fantasies as he's hypothesizing how I'm going to murder my wife. And it's just like some Wile E. Coyote shit. It's, you know, she's walking along in front of the house and he just throws a cinder block at her and just off her head. Or she's climbing up out of the pool and he's wired the railings with electricity. So it just, and she just dies like that.
One of the things that's both intriguing and frustrating at the same time is just the number of potential suspects. I mean, the serial rapist murderer is like obviously a just contrived by the writers to throw that in there as a very obvious and rather weak red herring.
The thing is, you can have a movie with lots of red herrings and people just being thrown in randomly. A Bay of Blood has a list of suspects as long as my arm and those 14 teenagers that come out of nowhere. And Mario Bava handles it with skill and manages to misdirect and everything comes together for him. This movie, however, is basically a made-for-TV movie with all the skill therein.
While I enjoyed it and I liked the misdirection, I liked trying to figure it out. It was muddy.
So let's say something nice about the movie.
It was over.
It was short.
It ended.
Oh, actually, no, I can... Okay, so everything was pretty mediocre throughout this thing. The acting was pretty mediocre. The lighting and the set design and the shot composition were all pretty mediocre.
Mm-hmm.
The soundtrack by Howard Shore, the guy who did a whole bunch of Cronenberg stuff and went on to do Lord of the Rings, was not bad.
It was a fairly solid soundtrack.
Yeah. Solid.
Okay.
Solid as a rock.
there's a few good things. As some of the sequences, particularly in the beginning and the end, were pretty well done. I really liked all the different suspects beating on her. I mean, it's a hard thing to say that I appreciate because of what it is. But on the other hand, I thought it was a well-done sequence. And I noticed one thing in particular. it was all the male suspects. He didn't have the mistress included, which is rather telling, in my opinion.
Oh, and then there's another thing. When they get the mass murderer up there and he's talking about his personality, you know, I'm a nice man. I wouldn't do anything like that. Shows him stabbing the young woman again, but he shows him stabbing her twice. And that shows her moving a couple of times, and it's a little more graphic. And you notice every time they show something bad happen, they up the ante later. They always fill in more stuff as it goes along.
Does my face look like the sort of face that would hurt somebody?
That's the thing. Is the man actually a murderer? He's described as a murderer, but a lot of this is POV stuff. And then you get these red herrings out of nowhere. Is this man a figment of Charles's imagination? Was he trumping up something to try and blame this guy by putting up some kind of scenario about him killing somebody?
I don't know.
Yeah, we'll never know. I mean,
it's kind of almost feels like a cheat. It feels like Taxi Driver. There's one shot in Taxi Driver. Marty Scorsese says can't possibly be Travis Bickle's POV because he's not in the room. That's Travis sitting in his cab across the street from Sport's apartment where Iris is dancing with him, and Travis has to be imagining them dancing and the dialogue between them and the music and stuff because it's supposed to be entirely Travis Bickle's POV. But it's a cheat because it can't possibly be because, you know, he doesn't know anything about either one of them, really.
Yeah.
The relationship. So I'm thinking, is this a case of the same thing? Are there things put in here that are supposed to be Charles's POV or the POV of any of the other characters without character knowledge? In other words, stuff they either imagined or stuff that came up from someplace else to kind of tip the apple cart.
A couple of more passes on the script and they might have been able to hammer those details out, but as it stands now, we'll never know because those not fleshed out in the slightest. So at the end of the day, it's not so much that it's bad, it's not so much it's well executed, it's just mediocre. Just mediocre.
Mediocre. Oh, it's a slog.
It is. It's very typical of that period. It's got everything. If you like that style of movie, then it's got everything from the 70s that ever went into any type of movie made for adults like that. Every single thing.
It's very much a made-for-TV movie. It's shot flatly. It's shot kind of just like it should be on NBC.
Yeah. Just insert TNA and cussing and swearing and a good splatter, you know. Mm-hmm. But and you've got something that you could run in theaters, kind of like what they did with Battlestar Galactica. And Buck Rogers.
Yeah, the all the courtroom stuff was interesting because you were trying to figure out what the hell was going on. But on the other hand, I've seen tons, and I mean tons, of much better courtroom stuff. You know, TV shows, there's tons of good courtroom drama. There's several movies where there's cases that, you know, they work up the tension, and I mean, shoot, look at one of my favorite movies, To Kill a Mockingbird. Now that is really good courtroom drama right there.
You know, comparing Harper Lee to some Canadian bullshit is not really fair. Yeah.
Well, that's true. But, you know, if you want an example of how to do it right,
this is not an example on how to do courtroom drama right. Hell, I would take the courtroom drama that we got in Human Experiments and here over this.
Ooh.
I have a problem. I want to know who the hell the other woman was. What her...
Oh, his mistress?
Yeah, his mistress. I mean, what did she do? She's French. What the hell was her deal with falling in love with this guy? She could have anybody. You know, she's from France, for God's sake.
Well, they were probably basing it on the real-life murderer. Alleged murderer. Alleged, don't sue me. The reason that Peter tried to kill his wife, or did kill his wife, was... for the $1 million insurance policy on her, and because he wanted to clear the way for his mistress. So they were probably just leaning heavy on that.
One of the things that was particularly interesting about the ending was, as the end credits roll, you've got him in his cell, and he's surrounded by, like, books and paperwork and stuff, so you can pretty much tell he's been studying the law to try and figure out how to appeal. But you hear a set of woman's footprints or footfalls going down a hallway.
Multiple times.
And it's like, That alone kind of cinches it for me that she was the one responsible. Either she did it herself or she hired somebody to do it.
Another interesting thing is just the way that it ended. I mean, it's so interesting. He's gone bald because of chemicals the barber used on his hair.
His face is all bloaty because he has hives from the food.
Yeah, and he's completely lost hope. I mean, he's like Lex Luthor. But one thing that I did find interesting in the first imagined murder, when Magdalene's running away from him in his car, she's running down the street. So they recorded the sound of footsteps indoors. So this is like the inside of his head, I guess, of these footfalls. Of, you know, the echoey sound you get from walking on a hard surface in a hallway or something.
See, the movie has moments of clever like that. It's like, okay, is this really a thematic thing, or did they just fuck up?
But, another thing about the footfalls is when she enters the courtroom, her shoes are clicking on the floor, too.
Good. And so there's a theme running through this movie. Mm-hmm. Maybe that is pointing towards the real murderer.
That's what I think.
In a way.
I could be completely going in left field on this one, but that's who I think did it. And if it's not her, I think it was the third man.
I'm going to put my money on random murderer who shivved a girl in the park and then proceeded to fuck her dead body. I'm going to put my money on him showing up.
And that's another thing. I mean, that kind of just points to the type of character you're looking at. I mean, somebody who does this, you know, the old 70s style lovemaking. This is a boring man. I want somebody with some excitement. Somebody who's going to slam me on the ground and pound me five ways from Sunday. You know, I mean, Jesus. I mean, yeah, but she doesn't love him. That's clearly evident. Yeah. And that's what he wants. He wants to be loved. He wants affection. He wants response other than pushing away. When they're in bed together, and she puts, you know, she's doing her hair, gets in the bed. And this is another thing. She didn't put her hair up when she got in the bed. I'm like, what woman does that? You brush your hair. You're spending all this time, make everything perfect before you go to bed. You smack your husband away when he touches you. Then you just put your hair back and lie on the pillow. You don't put it in a net or something like that, or a cap or some shit. It's just something that kind of stood out. It's like, why go to all the trouble? And then is it basically rubbing it in his face? This is what you ain't gonna get, and I'm right here. Not 3 feet from you.
Yeah.
I mean, they're sleeping in the same bed, and they're, you know, opposite, and this ain't going any further. Fuck you.
No, not fuck you.
No, yeah, exactly, no fuck you. You know? I mean, Jesus.
So, much like Charles, the viewer is left with blue balls from a frustrating movie.
Exactly.
So, I Loves You, Hugs and Kisses. Was it appropriate to leave it off the list? Or would you put it on the list?
Not me.
No.
Not for myself.
No, this movie was crazy tame.
Yeah. The violence, there is some of it, but except for one bit, it's comparatively tame. And there's really only nothing else that's too horribly controversial.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a little bit of nudity, but it's very tame and subdued.
Yeah, there was one of those very typical softer core sex scenes. Where she wasn't even moving when she was on top, you know, and that wasn't Elkie, that was the other woman.
That was the mistress.
That was the mistress.
Yeah.
It was very softly done. There was hardly any movement. They're doing the sideways on the bed thing, a lot of kissing, but there wasn't any eroticism in it, really.
The one reason was probably flagged for the censorials, because how did the movie open? It opened with that gratuitous scene in the chicken plucking factory, and that's animal cruelty. Bam, bam.
Mm, chicken plucking.
Oh, yeah, the animal cruelty. I could see that.
Yeah. But otherwise, off the list. I certainly wouldn't put it on the list, so acquitted. So, did we enjoy I Love You, Hugs and Kisses? I miss you, Hugs and Kisses. Whatever the fuck this movie is, I don't care. No, I've just tipped my hand that I hate this fucking movie.
For me, it was a meh. I didn't hate it, but I didn't love it either. It was a meh.
I enjoyed it. I felt there was quite a bit of room for improvement, but I generally liked it. Generally, it was like having to do a lot of swimming through really, really filthy water just to get to your goal.
Yeah, you're swimming through pea soup trying to get to the ham chunk there. And the ham chunk is festered with pea soup. And
there are a great many sins a movie can commit that I can forgive. I can forgive bad writing. I can forgive bad acting. I can forgive incoherent plot. The one sin that a movie cannot commit that I can forgive is being boring. And that's what this was. Relentlessly. The opening, the first 15 or so minutes were kind of strong. And I'm like, hey, okay, I'm getting into this. And then the courtroom hits and like the just... it dies. My interest just dies.
I will definitely agree with you that the middle portion of the film was boring.
The majority of the film.
Yeah. I liked the opening and I liked the ending. All of the stuff in the courtroom, except towards the very end, really seriously needed improving because the pacing was weird. I was able to understand all the flashbacks, but I could see how someone else could be confused by them because they did them all the freaking time and they never explained that it was a flashback.
And they never explained exactly whose point of view the flashback was from. Was it from the, you know, hell, the judge, the killer, the husband, the wife, who the hell knows?
They definitely could have benefited from one of the characters narrating for a few seconds, I remember this, or this is worse than that when we escaped from, and then go to it.
Unlike some of the other movies on the list, I didn't necessarily hate this movie, but that would require the movie to be able to generate some sort of emotion in me, and other than boredom, and it's unable to. So it's not hate, full-on hate, but I can't recommend it to anybody at all.
Yeah, this is
fair.
This is strictly for lovers of that type of movie, I guess.
All right, so there you go. A kind of an uneven decision here. Yeah. We'll catch you next week. Oh, movie, rest assured, I will not miss you. Hugs nor kisses. But that's okay. We're through this rough patch of terrible movies, at least for the moment, because next week we've got repeat offender Dario Argento back on the list. Next week, we're going to be watching Inferno, the second of the Three Mothers trilogy. So, in the meantime, drop us an email. We'd love to hear from you. The email address is thevideonastyproject@gmail.com, and stay evil. We'll catch you next week.